Welcome to Be the Giraffe. I'm your host and guide, Chris Jarvis. Perhaps you're wondering why Be the Giraffe. The giraffe literally evolved to be more vulnerable, but the truth is that giraffe gets to see things others can't and reach heights and reach food others won't. If you are looking for ways to stand out and reach higher in business, with money, and in life, then you are in the right place. Welcome to Be the Giraffe. Welcome to Be the Giraffe. I am your host and guide, Chris Jarvis. Welcome to the show where we help people elevate their perspectives and see a better path. I'm very excited today. I have my good friend, Billy Goldberg from the Buckeye Group. We've known each other for 28 years and we still talk, which is pretty good. So Billy has helped companies increase revenues by millions and tens of millions of dollars by helping them better understand people. Not technology, not AI necessarily, but actually work better with the people. So if you're in a situation with a company that you want to actually get your people to do more for you, you have got to check out this episode. It is going to be fantastic. So welcome to Be the Giraffe, Billy Goldberg. It is a pleasure to have you back.
Great to be with you.
Good to have you in town. Yeah, great. So we were talking offset before we started and all the things you do with money and all the money that you help people make, it's from working with people. Yep. It's the connection with people. And one of the things that, a theme on the show is that when people have major breakthroughs in something, it's usually because the opposite thing pushed them.
Right. Right?
You start to value something because in your previous life, it wasn't valued. And you talked about this story about people. So tell everybody, because you had the job that everybody wants. All right, so tell sure. us about that.
Sure, so I was an agent in the entertainment business. I represented television writers, directors, and production companies at one of the major talent agencies, William Morris, which is now called William Morris Endeavor. And what I realized years later, why I was miserable and why I didn't like it, was how people were being led. And everyone was hired when they were either 22, 23, 24, and then they got good at their job, but not good at leading people, but they got promoted because they were good at what they did and good at making money. And so you had people that were just increasingly moved up the chain without any kind of management skills. And so it was a time many, many years ago where certain behaviors were allowed that I don't think are allowed anymore. So that was one thing. Also, being in the entertainment business, and again, this is all reflection things.
But you moved. Like, you love sports and entertainment, like most young people.
Yeah.
You moved from Ohio to California.
Yep.
And then you get the job, and now it's the talent. So you get to go to all the premieres and do all the things and see, and like living. It's the dream that every young person has, not just the Midwestern dream, but like the dream is to go be around all the lights and the glitz, literally. Like.
And then when I started doing it, I realized this is not for me. And I realized it was because of the environment and the people, and I couldn't, the way people were managed, and I couldn't be the best version of myself. And it took several years for me to kind of get my arms around what wasn't working. And when I reflected on it, I realized that I can make a difference in organizations and in people's lives. And my whole why in life is I think we can change the world by making people happier at work, creating better leaders and better environments so that when they go home, they can be happy about where they were and be more productive sure. in the office.
I love that. How old were you? Like you did this for a while. How old were you when you realized this isn't for me?
I was 30.
30. So you spent 8-9 years
yep.
working on a career, making connections, doing stuff, and then realized it wasn't working. So you had this Jerry Maguire moment.
I did. I left it all behind. And from 30 to 40, I worked in various industries trying to figure out where my path was and what was best for me. And I really did have a Jerry Maguire moment. I was working for a company that was acquired by Gannett, and I flew to DC to the DMV and in their offices in Virginia, and spoke to some people there and realized they didn't care about me or the way that we were going to grow this part of the organization. And so on the plane ride home, I wrote my Jerry Maguire mission statement memo, and I sent it to someone who I had met one time, and I said, I need a guide to help me, because by the time I turn 40, which is in 6 months, I need to change what I'm doing. And
but go back a minute. So, yeah. So when you were 30 and you went on this quest,
yeah,
because there's a lot of people watching who are in jobs, in careers, doing something that doesn't give them what they want, but something we hear a lot is, I'm making too much to leave, or I've come this far. And it really stuck with the sunk cost, the idea that the past is already gone.
Yep.
You can't get it back, but this feeling that you put so much into something that you can't just give it up. How hard was that move? Because I think there's a lot of people watching this who are in a spot where it's not, life isn't giving them what they want, but the actual transformation, that change, the going into the cocoon, the unknown, is really hard. So, how did you do that?
So you and I have spoken a lot about this over the years, but one, thinking is bad for the team, right? If I had really thought about that and gone through the whole every imagination of what could go wrong and what couldn't go wrong, I wouldn't have done it. So some of it was I took a leap. And the other thing, then the thing that you and I spend a lot of time talking about is there anything better to invest in than yourself? Is there, if you're going to take a bet on something, that should be on yourself. And I did that, and it worked out for me.
So what did you do? Because, again, there's people there who want to do something, but they went to school. They're lawyers, and they don't want to practice law. They went to med school. They don't want to practice medicine. Or they're at an organization that they've got a couple promotions, and now they have they're in management, or they're doing something, or they've learned how to sell cups, tires, books, television, advertising, social media. What kinds of things did you invest in? Where did you look, and what was valuable? Because I think the audience would find that helpful.
So what I realized was that there are organizations, like I started to say before, that are just successful in spite of themselves, and could be even more successful if they looked at the way that they're organized and what their decision-making architecture is like, their communication pathways, their authority distribution, their conflict resolution management, their values alignment, and just the general energy flow. And so I went to school on leadership, and I started to work with a coach myself, and she ultimately went on to become a world-famous author, and which was kind of neat. I was her first client, and she helped me see that by doing something, moving the ball forward, you're going to find the path that works for you. And so I stopped working for her, working with her, and I opened up the Buckeye Group. And within 90 days, a deal that we had done for a company was in USA Today after I had been working at Gannett 6 months earlier. So it was kind of neat to have that come around.
So you went. It's a great story, and obviously we've known each other a long time, so I've watched a lot of this, but this is more for the audience. The investing in yourself and leaving something completely, what you were doing, it's not contracts and it's not management, it's not entertainers and agents, it's not writers, it's not, like, you saw how terrible they treated people and thought, okay, I'm going to get motivated to learn about people.
Yeah.
And then you hired a coach who was someone who wasn't world famous. You didn't go to, it wasn't Tony Robbins, it wasn't Jack Canfield, it wasn't John Maxwell. It wasn't one of the, you found somebody who worked for you.
Yeah.
That you got to spend some time with and learn. So there's, and you put yourself out there. It's not the masses of the asses and do what everybody else did. You found somebody who, and spent time with this person.
Yeah.
And then you went through a number of different jobs before you found this.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of trial and error. Like, how was that process of leaving and going to do something and then that doesn't work? And then doing, because again, I think that feeling is, people who want more feel like there's gotta be a switch and they're so afraid of the pain or the change.
Yeah.
But like, you have to go through transformations and try different things. You tried a lot of things.
There's no direct path to success. It's not a straight line. There is a narrative that is consistent. All of the work that I did, the jobs and the working with coaches to find out what was my highest and best use, and then to create and architect something that works for other companies happened because I had all of those other experiences. So you have to be willing to try and do and just keep moving forward. I launched the Buckeye Group in 2009 in our sort of worst economic time, you know, of all of our lifetimes. And it's because I just kept going forward. I didn't need the economy to work with me. I needed a few clients.
Right. And when you launched the Buckeye Group, the idea was for what? So what, because every business has to be a solution and you have to solve
sure.
a problem.
Sure.
And so the quick problem of, what was the problem you discussed with people?
Sure. So at that time, what we did was business development, and we helped organizations create different revenue pathways than what they had before and helped them, some organizations grow exponentially. But in that effort, that's where I realized my true calling was to help these organizations transform the way their people interact together and how they look at the people inside their organizations so that they can go and make those new revenue streams themselves. So it created a proprietary methodology called people-powered profitability, which was sort of kicked off that process. And now we help organizations figure out what leadership means to them and what, again, that list that I had before, those communication pathways, that decision-making architecture, all of the things that when you and I were growing up were considered the soft skills, those are the hard skills. They're hard in that people don't know how to do them, and they're also hard in that they're concrete. They're the things that actually move the needle.
I'm gonna wanna get into that when we get back. So when you come back, if you work with people who might not be happy, or you're a people who isn't happy, you need to come back at the next after the break, and we'll be right here. Ever feel like you're meant for something bigger in life? I'm Chris Jarvis, and on Be the Giraffe, we ditch the herd, stick our necks out, and find a better path in life, in business, and with money. It's time to disrupt the ordinary and build an extraordinary life. Laugh, learn, leap. Join me Friday, 7 p.m. on Now Media TV. Welcome back to Be the Giraffe. I am here with Billy Goldberg from the Buckeye Group. If you are trying to increase your profitability by $1 million, $10 million a year, you're in the right place. If you're working for somebody and you want to figure out how to be happier and get more done at work, you're also in the right place. So welcome back. Last segment, a lot of great background. We talked about the evolution of you going from being a sports agent to trying to get into business, getting into HR, human management, sales, productivity, all the things that you did for other companies, not being really happy with a lot of the bosses and a lot of the companies you worked for, feeling like you weren't appreciated, or realizing a lot of these companies had focus on the bottom line, which is fine, but almost to a disregard to the human element.
Sure.
And then you built a company, the Buckeye Group, which is all about the human element with your people-powered profitability, and that's the driver. And so even in that business, it's changed. So again, I think one of the challenges, I see this with my kids now, college age, going to college, just out of college, they want to know what the path is. And they don't know, they can't see it step by step. There's a lot of people who won't take the first step
right.
unless it's really clear. I'll do this thing, I'll get this job, I'll make this money. They want to know what it is.
Right.
And they're not very good with ambiguity. But in a consulting gig, you handled the ambiguity really well. And that came from, well, tell everybody, like how you were able to find your way and evolve so many different times.
It came from a willingness to do whatever it took to get to a place where I was in my highest and best use. And that's what I'm doing for organizations, is helping their people get to their highest and best use faster, right? There are so many cliches that come to mind when you did your intro on this segment. You know, you take the first step and the path will appear. I think that's super important. And just letting people know, doing something is better than doing nothing. So if you're talking to people your kids' age, just go out and do something and be do the best you can at that possible whatever that is. And then the Steve Jobs quote about, you know, you can only connect the dots looking backwards. What are you trying to connect the dots looking forward? Because you don't know what's going to happen. I use COVID all the time and now it's been, I guess, 5 years, 6 years now since that happened. But like, we didn't know that was going to happen, right? We don't know what's happening tomorrow. Our lives could be upended. So just get going on a path and don't worry about what it is. And then be the best at that, whatever that next step is,
right?
The best version of you.
I had this question with I sat in that seat in a different episode when Shannon Faulkner, who's my operations person, interviewed me and talked about how did you learn how to do the thing you did, because you didn't go to school for what you do.
Right.
And the answer I had, and I wonder how you feel about this, was I said, I asked a lot of questions to figure out what people wanted that they weren't getting, because I figured that's the easiest way for me to find. When you're working for yourself, you've got to find a way to make money.
Absolutely.
And so what is it you want that you don't have? Because that would seem to be, that's a lot easier than let me come in and supplant, replace somebody else who's already doing something. Now there's competition. But if it's you're not getting this, I'd ask questions, what aren't you getting? You have a knack for connecting with people and you're very good at it. What are some of the questions you ask? Like when you were getting into this, what were some of the questions you asked? Because again, there's a lot of people here who get into rooms, but they don't know what to say.
Right.
And there's so much, especially nowadays with social media, people are so afraid of making mistakes and this whole getting canceled and everything else. They don't want to say the wrong thing, so they'll often say nothing.
Right.
Unless they're behind their Twitter and then they say whatever they want.
But, sure.
But generally, they're afraid to ask questions. So what are some interesting questions that people can ask, like at work or of their employees, or things that you find generate really interesting conversations and uncover opportunities?
What are you working on these days that's exciting you? What drew you to do what you do? Why are you in this industry? Why do you get up and go to work every day? What inspires you? All of those questions are things that anybody's happy to answer. They're very rarely asked those questions, and it's about engaging. And I think that's super important, is understanding where people are coming from, why they're doing what they're doing. When I work with CEOs, we spend the first part of the day going through their history, not just their resume, but their whole life. What major events impacted how and why they do what they do?
And do you ask that to figure out what moves them, so you have a better idea of what they're going to be more emotionally attached to, or what?
What they're emotionally attached to, but also what is going to drive them forward in their decision making, what influences their decision making. Hey, remember that happened two companies ago? I think you're doing that again. Maybe there's a different way to look at this, and you organized your team this way when you were there. Maybe there's a way to do it that's going to have a better impact.
So what's more important? Is it more important for the leaders to know what drives the employees, or is it important for the up and coming employees to understand what's driving senior management? What tilts more? What do you find more powerful in the organization?
So I think leaders and managers that are willing to be open, willing to be vulnerable and talk about what that why is very empowering to the tiers below them. And eventually you'll learn about the folks doing the work, but you got to start at the top.
And how often do you see the challenge with senior management people, whether it's in private equity or it's the CEOs you're working with or C-suite executives, How often are they struggling with finding or retaining really good talent? Is that a small problem, giant problem?
It's the biggest problem there is in business. We did something interesting with a private equity firm a couple years ago. We took a list of 20 leadership attributes that you can just find off the internet. It wasn't anything special or proprietary. And we had them rank two of their top portfolio company leaders and see how many of those 20 skills, 20 attributes they had. And then we had them look at two of their lower performing CEOs and see how many of those 20 they had. Well, their top two had 18 of the 20 attributes, and the lower two tier had 8 or 9 of the 20 attributes. And so it's a small sample size, but I said to them, hey, we just showed that, you know, the better performing managers, and I said, better performing leaders, and I said, that's not just your perception. Their bottom line and their numbers are reflective of that too. And they said, absolutely. I said, so we just proved that these soft skills are the hard skills.
Right.
We then force ranked and created a list of 10 attributes for that firm for them to look at when they're hiring new CEOs, when they're acquiring companies, when they're looking to add on or bolt on something to a platform, because that is what drives the bottom line.
So that's for the private equity firm that's investing in the company for their things. Does the same thing hold true with people running companies with their managers, managers with their employees? Same deal? Finding good people, understanding what makes good people, developing the people, same challenge?
Yeah, I mean, to use a sports an analogy, talk to a lot of leaders about drafting athletes rather than position players. And you can train people to do a specific job, but if they don't have the right chemistry or the right desire, if they don't want to do something, then it's the wrong person for you. But what you have to do is you have to take a step back first and say, what kind of person do we need in this role? Not what experience do we need them to have, but what kind of person? Then add in the experience, then add in the skill set, that kind of thing. But what's the kind of human that we need here?
I was in a Vistage CEO group for 12 years, and we had speakers every month, and one of the speakers came in and said that the biggest challenge in business is that we hire people based on what they've done, so we look at their resume,
right?
But we fire them based on who they are.
Yeah.
And then also said, we tend to hire fast and fire slow.
Right, and it's got to be the opposite.
It's got to be the opposite, and so one of the interesting questions when it says, if we end up hiring people for what they've done, which we check the boxes, right, there's a lot of AI tools to look at resumes coming in.
Sure.
Right? People push it out and then they run the AI thing, but that's all about what you've done. That's not who you are.
Right.
But if you knew who the people were from the beginning, then you'd hire the right people and you wouldn't hire the wrong person.
Right.
Because the cost of replacing somebody is enormous.
Right.
And so, where do you see that fit in? Like, how one, do you agree with that? And two, what can people do in that understanding that it is all about who the person is so important in the process, in the retention, in the growth?
Sure. So exactly what you said is that it's the opposite. You need to hire slow and fire fast. But the hiring process is actually quick once you know the kind of person that you're looking for. You've got to do the work. Before, I was working with an organization in fourth quarter of last year. They needed to revamp their sales organization. They were going to get rid of a couple of people. And they said, we need to hire for this position and this position. And I said, wait, how do you know that's the position that you need? Let's define what that role is. Let's define who they interact with. What are their communication pathways? What is their decision-making architecture? All of those kinds of things. And then let's find the kind of person that's going to fit with that architecture and with those pathways. And then we will find that person. And then that person shows up. But you need to define it first. The work comes before.
I think that's great. So if you're looking for a job, if you're looking to hire good people, if you're looking to expand, you've got to come back after the break with Billy Goldberg. We're going to talk about how you actually do that, how you get your head out of the weeds and stop just doing things because you've always done them, so you can find that better path. So come back after the break. We'll be right here. Hope is not a strategy. If you're ready to engineer your wealth differently, apply to have a complimentary financial diagnostic done on your business. Let's discover what's currently missing and, more importantly, what's possible. Once you're making millions of dollars or you're worth tens of millions of dollars, you have outgrown conventional thinking. So stop buying off the rack and get something custom made for you that's going to help your family meet all of their goals. Welcome back to Be the Giraffe. My guest today is Billy Goldberg from the Buckeye Group. And in the last segment, we were talking about people keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And it reminded me of a story of the woman who asked her mom, why is it that you cut the edges of the roast off when you put it in the oven? Like, we always do it. Why do we do it? And she's like, I don't know. Let me ask my mother. And so she asks, so it goes to the grandmother, says, why do you cut it off? She's like, well, because my mother did. And they go up and they keep going. And then finally you get to the, you know, the matriarch in the nursing home is like, well, we're just wondering, why did you do it? Is it to make it moist? Does it do something? And she's like, no, I just had a really small pan.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And so you find that you're doing things and you start repeating things over and over again, especially in business. You just get used to, this is how we always did this. And that's a big part of your practice, is getting people to get their head out of the weeds. And you have a process for this, for getting them to stop going, this is the thing that we do.
Right.
So to talk about that process, because I think it's so important for people not to keep doing the same thing.
Sure.
And going down these paths that may be very inefficient or ineffective.
So my process is something that I can get into in 1 second, but if there's not a willingness on the part of leadership to do things differently and to examine what they're doing, it doesn't work. So you can get all the gurus and people that you want, but if there's not a desire and an admission from the very top of the organization, it won't work. I heard something last week that really resonated for me, is that culture is not taught, it's caught. And so demonstrate that as a leader. If you want people to be out of the weeds, if you want your people to look at things differently, you need to be that way yourself as a leader. But we come in and we look at those six elements at first in our diagnostic. We look at the decision-making architecture and those communication pathways and the authority distribution. And then we look at the conflict resolution management, and are your values aligned with what you do? And then what's the general energy flow of the organization? Inside any culture, I think there are three key elements, and it's integrity, and that's sort of structural integrity, that's alignment, and it's transparency. And so we look at those elements within those six categories to make sure that your organization has the proper the foundation to create what it is you want to build, and then we create an infrastructure on top of that foundation.
I want to dig into that, because you said integrity, alignment, and transparency. So yeah. What does integrity mean in this situation, what does integrity mean for management?
That means, can we withstand some kind of trauma to the organization? Is it market forces, something from the economy? Is there some kind of rogue employee that is gonna screw us up? Is there a client or customer problem? Can we withstand that culturally, structurally, based on who we are as an organization?
So you're looking for possible fracture points.
Yeah.
And so like a lot of things, let's make sure if there's something at risk, let's fix it.
Yeah.
And then alignment is what in that sense?
Alignment starts with, you know, our organization's values. Are we really living values, or is it just a sign on a wall, live, laugh, love? Or are we really
living,
doing
laughing, and loving?
Really living, laughing, and loving. And is there a congruency with how we're treating our people with how we want our people to treat our customers and our clients. And then transparency is, you know, are we open and honest about who we are with each other and what we're doing?
It's so interesting because one of the most powerful things, what you're doing, something we've done with some of the corporate clients we have is we'll always go in and survey the people. And this surveying of the employees and ask them questions like, who are our clients? What do we do? Who are our competitors?
Yeah.
How are we better than they? Why do people come to work for us? Why do people leave us or work with us? Why do they work with other people? Yeah. And look for everybody in the organization and see how they answer the questions.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating how seldom they all align.
Yeah.
Because everybody's so busy. And so that part of alignment and transparency is when other people know each other's jobs.
Yeah.
And everybody's on the same page.
Super important.
It's way so interesting. And it's overlooked because you put it in the handbook and you put it on the wall, but it's not right. And at the break, you were talking about being in, you know, working in the sports agency, and you use the line, you know, I love the movie Office Space with the stapler and whatnot, or the movie or the show The Office, and you put the stapler in the, you know, Lucite or the Jello. But you said people like throwing staplers at you, as if that was a common management procedure.
Right.
A leadership strategy was to throw the stapler at the guy. And so so you get those things done. How long does that process take?
So it depends on the program and the organization, but we have a 2-day diagnostic, and then we have a 6-month program that is an architecture that comes out of that diagnostic that we can build upon. And then there's, you know, year-long advisory after that. But within 2 days, we can really tell you what's going on with that organization and make some recommendations and then help you implement it from there.
You said in the last segment that the most important thing for successful businesses is to have the right people, to get the right people and to have them have the right attributes and the things that they need to be successful. Yeah. And finding good people very hard, retaining good people also very hard. How do you find these companies once they've done this 2-day assessment and they figure out really where they're going and they're transparent about the alignment and the vision and what's important to them? How much easier does the recruiting process go? What impact does that have on the entire hiring process for them when they're clear on what the hell they do, why they do it, and how they do it?
It's so much easier. And again, you talked about companies, you know, flipping the model and hiring fast. You can actually hire fast if you know exactly what you're looking for. But more to the point, after you've hired the people, they're more productive. The organization is more productive, and you're making exponential growth on your objective, towards your objectives, whether it's more revenue or client satisfaction, whatever that is. And, you know, there's the old adage about the Clydesdales, right? One Clydesdale can pull 8,000 pounds, and I may screw up the numbers, but something like this. And two can pull 16,000, but if two are trained to work together and be aligned, they can pull 32,000 pounds. So it really is about how are we working together? What are our systems for working together? How are we communicating about those systems? Who's making the decisions around those systems? Are those systems aligned with our values? If there's a conflict, how are we addressing them? And are we liking what we're doing?
Right. Now, a lot of people feel like the speed of business is so fast, I don't have time to do a retreat, you're taking me away from making money. How often when you go into these retreats do you find that people are missing huge opportunities, or that there's some big strategic, like how often does that uncover? This is not just a deep dive into, let's try and do a colonoscopy and figure out what's going on operationally. Like, how often does this uncover major strategic shifts or massive opportunities when you get everybody in a room and you start talking about it? This isn't just about an expense management tool. This can this have bigger implications?
Yeah, so the major shift is on the outcome. The tweaks that need to be made are often minor, and we can just tilt things on its ear a little bit and move forward in a very big way. Oftentimes there is a person in the organization that shouldn't be in that seat, or that is a rogue personality that the management team has swept under the rug, and oh, they're performing. Okay, well, if they're a high performer and they're rogue, that's okay. We can figure out a way to address that or get rid of that person, but we can't just keep changing the organization to keep that person happy. So oftentimes it's making small adjustments like that that can have a major impact.
That's a really important thing, that when you figure out what your values are and what's important to you, you're not kicking somebody out. You're giving people a chance to be successful, because in an environment where certain things are valued,
yeah,
and you're clear about it, people will opt in and people will opt out because
right.
it's the best place for them.
Right.
Right. Some people want a great deal of structure. If you need a great deal of structure in your life, you will not want to work for me.
Right.
Like it will be a horrible existence for you, because that's not how I leave things pretty open.
Right.
We have goals, we have things, and other people are very focused. And so it's so important to find this, and people don't take the time, but the value of this is getting the right people to understand what's important, and then taking the time. You talked about alignment too, and giving people a voice.
Yeah.
And giving a chance to pitch in, because the people who are on the, you know, people at different levels of the company see things differently.
But also guardrails and structure look different in different organizations, right? And part of your organization is we don't have a lot of structure because we're very fluid. On the other hand, you're very structured in the kinds of people that you want to work with, right? You have a very strict no asshole policy. And so, you do have guardrails, right? And those are—
At least one.
Yeah, exactly. And so those kinds of constraints help weed out either the wrong kind of work, the wrong kind of worker, the wrong kind of partner. So even though you don't have guardrails, you have guardrails.
Right.
Right.
So we have so much to cover, and we only have 4 segments. In the next segment, when you come back, we're going to talk to Billy about what you can do with this process, when you really want to see what people-powered profitability looks like for you as a leader, or if you're not a leader and you're working in the company, how do you create great value by bringing some of the ideas and the things that you have. So we're going to talk about how to get you to the next level, how to get your company to the next level, how to bring your people to a higher level, when we get in some of the real details and some great, fantastic stories. So make sure you come back after the break so we can go through the people-powered profitability with Billy Goldberg from the Buckeye Group. We'll be right back. Let me ask you, how much of your hard-earned income is getting gobbled up by taxes? 30%? 40%? Maybe more than 50? You're out here crushing it, only to hand over a big fat check to Uncle Sam every year. And here's the kicker, you're probably overpaying big time. But it's not your fault. You've got smart accountants, savvy financial advisors, maybe an attorney or a wealth strategist. They're doing all the usual stuff, right? Home office deductions, Augusta rule, opportunity zones, solar credits, blah, blah, blah. But here's the problem. They're playing defense, not offense. They're focused on the easy wins, the surface level stuff. Meanwhile, you're leaking cash through holes they didn't even know exist. I'm Chris Jarvis. People call me a financial fixer. Why? Because I help high-earning entrepreneurs like you stop bleeding money to taxes and start stacking real wealth. I've written 19 books. And when big accounting and law firms run into trouble with their clients, they call me to help them. Why? Because I don't do basic. I do bold. I get results. And more importantly for you, we only get paid out of your savings. And I'm not talking about some overhyped, complicated tax schemes you've heard about. This doesn't require you moving to Puerto Rico or someplace else. I'm not pitching infinite banking or some investment in solar credits that might tie up your money for a decade. Nah, I'm using simple, powerful, structural strategies that legally slash your tax bill by 30% or more every year. How? By helping you set up a smart company, an infrastructure that immediately and drastically helps you reduce what you owe through a proven system. No hassle, no chaos, no firing your accountant, no firing your attorneys, no restructuring your life. These are the strategies the top 0.1% already know, the ones they use to keep more of their money, to build more wealth, and to pay for whatever they want. A business for their kids, college for their kids, a new acquisition, pay down debt, real estate, all of it. The money you're unnecessarily losing to taxes right now, it could be that down payment on real estate, on a business, on anything that will help you build your family's financial legacy. And if you're thinking, this sounds way too good to be true, let me make it even better. I'm willing to bet on myself with what I call the crazy guarantee. If I can't reduce your taxes by at least 20%, I'll pay you $20,000. So here's the real question. Do you want to keep shelling out big bucks, watching hundreds of thousands of dollars vanish, knowing that money could have been fueling your family's future? Or are you ready to take one smart, simple step and start keeping more of what you earn? If you're ready to play offense and start stacking wealth like the elite, click the button below. Book a call. We'll chat. I'll show you where you're bleeding money and exactly how to stop it without stress, without risk, and without overcomplicating your life. It's time to stop playing defense. It's time to win. You can keep doing what you've been doing and keep losing big to taxes, or you can do something smarter and finally start building wealth like the 0.1%. It's something we call the Billionaire Blueprint. The secrets they know are now within your reach. Click the button. Let's talk. This only takes 2 hours of your time. Save big or walk away with 20 grand. Either way, you win. Welcome back to Masterpiece Theater, and I'm here with Poet Laureate Billy Goldberg. We're here to talk about some fantastic ways for you to increase your profitability. And we want to start with, we're talking about a lot of really cool business things, but episode one was Dave Stack, a guy who's went from a trailer park to $1 billion of net worth. And he talked about the education system teaches you to be a follower, teaches you to be a cog in a machine. Like the system teaches you to get a job to go work for someone else.
Yes.
And he's rather adamant about it. And right. He's been successful, so happy to hear what he has to say.
Sure.
At the break, you were talking about the challenges, because we have kids, the college thing, kids going through school, jobs. The problem with success is that we're often not trained for success. So, like, talk about that, because there's a lot of people who are doing the thing they thought they were supposed to do.
Right.
The thing they were trained to do, told to do, expected to do, but then they end up unhappy. Like, I think that's a common situation. So you have a great perspective on that.
So now 30 years ago, I read a book, I think Rick Pitino wrote it, called Success is a Choice. And that has been something that has really resonated for me. I don't remember one word from the book, but I do remember the title, and that we get to choose our path. We get to choose how we look at things. We get to choose how we move forward based on that path and how we look at things. And so one of the things that I talk to leaders about is that culture is a choice, and that growth is a choice, and that it doesn't just happen automatically. And so what can we do inside organizations to get people to realize that they too have a choice based on the infrastructure that we've created for them as guardrails, because we all need them, but how can they choose their path forward in the organization to get our objectives met?
That one is so fascinating on so many levels. You have two girls. I know this because I know them, but they're very different people. And you can't motivate them the same way. You can't, they don't need to be, you handle situations with them, with your kids, differently.
Sure.
Because they're different. Yet we come to work. We all know with our kids they need to be handled differently, but then we
right.
get to work and we have one employee handbook, one website, one newsletter, one incentive manual.
Right.
And when it doesn't work, we say people aren't team players.
Right.
We can't manage the two people that we made, but we the same way, but we want to get into a company with 10 or 10,000 people and expect everybody to be the same.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, the goal sounds like it's how do you align the personal goals of the people who work for you with the corporate goal? And it's there's some work to be done to figure that out, that it's not like to assume that everybody wants the same thing is ludicrous.
Yeah, and it's not productive for your organization or for the people. I think the one thing that leaders miss, and throughout a lot of the organizations that I work with, the one-on-one meeting is the thing that is misplayed the most, right? You and I, if you worked for me, we'd probably be most productive if we went for a walk every 2 weeks in 45 minutes. We could cover everything that we needed to cover. Other people, you know, maybe they're better doing a Zoom. Maybe they're better doing a phone call. What are the kinds of questions that you can ask that person to get the desired answers that you need, the information that you need, but through a different means? And I think if you're doing everything the exact same way, you're not going to get the most out of people. So talk a lot about, you know, having the right people in the right seats on the bus, but how do you leverage those people to their highest and best use once they're in that seat is super important.
Yeah, we help people build some sales incentive programs, and the idea that everybody wants the same thing. Some people extrovert, some people introvert. Some people going on the boondoggle with all the people they work with sounds like hell.
Yeah.
They want no part of that,
right?
So to bring somebody on the boondoggle might cost you 10 grand. They might rather have 5 grand to put toward a new car, or they might rather go do their own thing.
Sure.
But if you know what it is, what an interesting conversation if you could, because if you worked for me, it'd be, I know you and Ronnie and Lee go on these football trips all the time, and it was, hey, by the way, if you hit this number, I'll pay for the football trip.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you tell Ronnie and Lee that you're going to be like that, oh, by the way, if I hit this number, this whole thing will be covered.
Right.
Then all of a sudden they might make a referral. They're going to ask, like, they become accountability partners. Like, I can find something that this thing may cost me 3 grand where it was going to cost me 10, or it might cost me 10 instead of 30, or whatever the number is. But we also have something to talk about.
Right.
Just, hey, who do you think is going to be playing in the national championship? What about this? You can start connecting with people.
Absolutely. And connecting with people and then letting them figure out how to get from point A to point B. We talk a lot about organizations having goals and objectives at the end of the year. That's point B. We don't spend a lot of time talking about point A, where we are, how we got to point A. I think it's really important to establish where you are and to have common language around where you are right now in this moment, and then say, we want to get to point B from this place, point A.
Yep.
How you get there is personal to you. Let me, as your leader, get the obstacles out of the way so that you can go blow past point B.
Right.
So I talk to leaders about that a lot, which is your number one job is to clear obstacles and allow that person to be the best version of themselves, the best worker of themselves, so that they can achieve the goals that you want.
Right. Now we both have kids in their first jobs, and we both know the challenges of trying to give advice to your own children is very hard.
Yeah.
And so for the people in the audience who are either have children that they're trying to guide, or by introducing them to the show, or there are people watching the show who are employees who aren't leaders.
Right.
So give them perspective on what's something that someone who works in an organization can say to a manager or to a leader, or something they can volunteer for, or something they can do that will raise them up the list. Right? Because we talked about finding good people for the people at the top is so hard. What are the things that people who are working there can do, offer, say, that will ingratiate them to, you know, to the people above them.
I think a lot of it has to do with, here's what I'm seeing every day. I'm doing this, and there's an opportunity for us to do something a little bit differently. And hopefully you have a leader that's willing to hear that. I just met with 2 Green Berets. They ran a segment of a retreat for me, and there were 2 big takeaways. I'll talk about the second in a moment, but the first was these special units work in teams of 12, and then they have 200 or 300 regular Army support them, and the 12 of them at one point were meeting to kind of figure out a strategy on something, and a 19-year-old sergeant came in just to bring them lunch. He was not, part of their team, but he was part of this 200-person support team. And he looked at their whiteboard, and he said, "Team, do you mind if I step in here? Because I've been boots on the ground here for 90 days. I'm seeing a little bit of something that you're not seeing." And rather than kicking them out, "Hey, you 19-year-old kid, we're Special Forces unit," they pulled up a 13th chair and he ended up showing them where landmines, like literal landmines, yeah. not just business landmines, and things where they could do it different because he was, you know, in country. And so leverage that. I think the message is more to leaders here than to the people.
To be open.
To be open to receiving those things, because I think there's a willingness of younger employees to say that if there's a willingness for that to be received.
Well, I hear a lot of the young people say, "Well, I don't want to say the wrong thing. I'm afraid of getting booted out." So they don't offer anything, which I think that's wrong, right? Like if they have something, there should be like the offering is a. You want to find out whether the environment you're in is actually welcoming to other opinions.
Yeah, and if you get booted out, it may be the best thing for you.
That's right. Congratulations.
Yeah, exactly.
So what's the second thing that came from the Green
Beret? So the second thing that came from that is an after-action report. So that may come a week later after a whole mission's been done, and they're, you know, what happened and what could have been done. Or it could be in the afternoon after a morning session. Like, what can we do better as a team? That is not done enough, right? What could be done better? What worked? What can be replicated? What needs to leave from our tactics? And how can we communicate better? Did we communicate better? Did you see something that that worked really well that we should, you know, make part of our process? Or is there something that we should stop doing?
So helpful. Yeah. So. Tell people, there's a lot of people watching this who run companies. There's something like 90% of people who watch stuff on this network have a business, small business or medium-sized business. How do people find you?
At thebuckeyegroup.com, at Billy Goldberg on the socials. And reach out, and I'm happy to talk to business owners to have them think through what's going on. And if it makes sense for us to work together, we can do that. But
and who are the clients that seem to work best with you and get the most out of that? What size? How do you describe the right
sure,
company?
Mostly lower middle market companies that are making between $25 million and $100 million. We can make an impact. Adding $15 million to the bottom line of a $100 million organization is a big deal.
It's a lot of money. And how many employees usually do you find people? Like, what size organization number of employees seems to make sense?
Anywhere from 12 to 200.
12 to 200. Yeah. There we go. That's great. What's a good takeaway for people on the show? Do you think the biggest thing about being in an organization and connecting with people? What's the big? Just tell them one or two things you think that people could do today.
Sure. So I mentioned this earlier. This quote that I heard a couple weeks ago that I really like: that culture is caught, not taught. So be the kind of leader that you want your people to be, and treat your organization the way you want your organization to treat your clients and your customers.
That's fantastic. Yeah. Billy Goldberg, great to have you on the show.
Thank you. It's been fantastic.
Appreciate it.
And
we will make sure you come back next week to see the next episode of Be the Draft. But watch this one again. There's so many good tips for here for you, for your organization, for the people you work with. If you want to increase your profitability, it comes through the power of the people in your organization. So elevate your perspective, see a better path, and make sure you be the draft.